Has anyone here heard of the grand jury case of the 23? Okay, not too many people. Okay, some people. So I'm here tonight because I am one of the 23 people who's been subpoenaed by the FBI to appear before a federal grand jury. So I'll first tell you kind of how I got sucked into this and then go over what a grand jury is because it's very confusing and what this really means to all of us, not just the 23 of us. For me, it all started last summer. Last summer, I decided to take a trip to Israel and Palestine that I have been wanting to take for literally 10 years. I'm 24, I'm Jewish, and it's somewhere I've always wanted to go. My political activism has always been around traveling. I've traveled to Cuba 4 times, I've been to Venezuela on a youth festival, and that was all before I turned 18. And so, or sorry, before I turned 20, I was 19 when I went to Venezuela. So Palestine was one of the more political places in addition to Cuba and Venezuela, so I thought, sure, I'll go. The trip that I decided to go on was an educational trip. We met with NGOs, we met with teachers, peace and civil rights groups, nonviolent protesters, and their families. Everyone we met with was basically supporting the peace movement. And the people that we met with focused on farming rights, legal rights, housing rights, and women rights for Palestinians, not just living in the West Bank, but also in Israel. It was a 2-week delegation, so we spent part of our time in Israel and part of it in the West Bank. One thing that I'll say about the trip, usually I say a lot more, is when we first arrived in Tel Aviv, 2 of the girls that I traveled with are Palestinian Americans who actually grew up here in Chicago like me. And they were detained in the airport for 10 and a half hours simply because when they were asked what the origin of their last name was, and they said, well, our grandparents were born in Ramla, which is now part of Israel, that was basically a red flag to the Israeli officials, and that was the whole basis of their detainment for 10 and a half hours. Their entry into Israel was actually contingent on the 2 girls allowing the Israeli officials to log into their personal emails. So, of course, when we got back to the United States, we were all literally so excited to be back in, this democratic society. I say that with quotes. I know that's not going to be on the audio. So a couple months after we returned, all 3 of us began to face a different type of intimidation. And the difference was we weren't in Israel anymore. We were actually here in the United States. And this time it was our own government and the FBI targeting us. It started a month after we got back on September 24th, 2010. More than 70 FBI agents in a coordinated early morning raid burst into 7 homes of prominent anti-war and international solidarity organizers in Chicago, Minneapolis, and Grand Rapids, Michigan. They also burst into an anti-war office in Minneapolis. Many of their personal possessions were confiscated, and it was all under the basis of material support of foreign terrorism. In one home in Chicago, they took their teenage son's poetry, his artwork, his schoolwork, pictures of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. As far as I can, that's not evidence of material support of foreign terrorism. They were also looking, their main objective was to find anything with a list, anything with a name on it, any sort of core, connections, associations. Who do you know politically? That was the main goal in these raids. So these 7 people who had their homes raided and bursted into by these FBI agents at like 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning, they were all subpoenaed to appear before a grand jury in addition to 7 others. After all 14 of these original people who were targeted by the FBI refused to testify, the FBI decided to target 9 others, and I was the first one. What happened was on December 3rd, so we're talking months later, an FBI agent actually called me directly on my cell phone. I always joke at this point because I was actually reading one of the Dragon Tattoo books, and so one of the Stieg Larsson books. And if anyone here has read those books, it's all about, conspiracy, government infiltration, everything like that. So I'm in the middle of the second one, and I get this cell phone, ring, and I thought, oh my God, how do they know that I'm reading this book? And it was obviously nothing related to the book that I was reading, but that didn't even occur to me that, the FBI would be calling me for any other reason. And so, of course, this FBI agent very politely says, "Oh, Sarah, hi. I was just wondering if we could sit down for coffee." And I thought, "Oh my gosh, FBI agent, authority. Yes, of course we can sit down. We can go whenever. Like, I'll do whatever the authority tells me. When I asked what he wanted to talk about, he said, I'm not at liberty to discuss it. And I thought, well, I'm not, it almost sounded like, especially if I'm reading a Stieg Larsson book, I was like, oh, no, I don't think so. So then I thought, oh, no, I better call a lawyer. So eventually he, after I said I was going to call a lawyer, he goes, okay, I can find, I'll tell you, it has something to do with the trip that you took last summer. And I assume you know which trip I'm talking about. I, of course, got off the phone with the agent, called a lawyer with the National Lawyers Guild, informed the two girls who were Palestinian who were detained in Israel that, hey, the FBI might be contacting you because I just got a phone call. Of course, I was correct. Half an hour later, after I got my phone call on my cell phone, the same FBI agent and his partner of some sort showed up at their house banging on the door, very different, approach. Not the, hi, let's have coffee. And they basically burst in and said, you're being subpoenaed to appear before a federal grand jury. At that time, I was informed I was also going to be subpoenaed. I think that the FBI agent was actually pretty annoyed because the girls knew they were coming. And so they were already on the phone with the lawyer. And as they opened the door, they just handed the cell phone over and said, here's our lawyer. This is my speculation, but I honestly think that in response, the FBI agent waited literally a month and 2 weeks to give me my subpoena. So I knew that they could show up wherever, whenever they wanted to basically say, hey, you're part of a federal investigation. Doesn't look good when you're a nanny. So that was basically the intimidation that they used against me. They also subpoenaed six more people that month. They kind of broke it up. So a week after us, two more people, and then the rest of them were subpoenaed, I think, a couple days before Christmas. So our grand jury date was on January 25th. It was a little different than the first one. The first one was a week after they were subpoenaed. Ours was a month away, almost 2 months. And we did the exact same thing the first 14 did. We all refused to testify. So what I've learned since then is actually what a grand jury is. I had heard it was really scary, and now I actually know why. So it's essentially a secret court. When you're summoned to a grand jury, you cannot have a lawyer. There's no lawyers present, period. There's no witnesses, and there's no official transcript that you can read through post the proceedings. There's also no judge presiding over the process. And so what you're going into is a room with the prosecutor and the jury that he handpicks. In this case, it's a he. And the jury that he picks doesn't have to be screened for any bias. And so there's no bias screening. The other thing is the way the jury is selected is it's jury selection. So, who here would know what a grand jury is if you were selected on a jury through jury selection? I sure wouldn't. And so you would look to this, authority figure who's the prosecutor. And his job is to indict whoever, he's building evidence to support his case of material support of foreign terrorism. The only evidence that's brought before the grand jury is the prosecutor's evidence. And so what I mean by that is he can submit or omit whatever he wants, whatever's relevant to his argument. There's no rebuttal process. There's no, hey, I have a, let me just, get a word in there. That doesn't exist. There's no bringing in your own evidence, nothing like that. You're simply expected to answer every question that they ask you, no matter what they ask you. They're also welcome to ask you anything they want. And so, of course, it's our Fifth Amendment right as Americans to refuse to testify, which is what all of us did, mostly by letters. We basically wrote a letter saying we would not show up. But what can happen next and what is actually happening next is we can all be re-subpoenaed, or some of us could be re-subpoenaed. When you're re-subpoenaed, the prosecutor has the option to impose immunity on you. If you're given immunity, that means you have to appear before the grand jury or you go to jail. You have basically two options. There's civil contempt, and if you're convicted of civil contempt, you face up to 18 months in prison. And if convicted of criminal contempt, you can face up to life in prison. The longest sentence right now is 15 years someone's facing, simply not a crime, simply for refusing to go in front of the grand jury. I'm going to give you a really short question that I read that was asked in a different grand jury proceeding, just so you can get an example of what we could be facing question-wise. I want you to describe for the grand jury every occasion when you have been in contact with, attended meetings with, which were conducted by or attended by or been in any place when any individual who is speaking whom you knew to be associated with or affiliated with the Students for a Democratic Society, the Communist Party, or any other organization advocating revolutionary overthrow of the United States. In doing so, please describe to the grand jury when these incidents occurred, where they occurred, who was present, and what was said by every single person there, what you did at the time that you were in these meetings, groups, associations, or conversations. That's question number one. So we refuse to testify for a million reasons, but one of them is these questions are supposedly protected by our First Amendment. Associations, speech, what people say, who we meet with, that is our First Amendment right, and that's supposedly protected. We're supposed to be able to, you know, speak freely without the government interfering, and we're supposed to, you know, be able to join any group or attend any, you know, be part of any association without government interference. So what it, you know, what we realized is this, you know, this case has absolutely nothing to do with material support of foreign terrorism. None of the 23 of us have been involved in any material support of foreign terrorism. We've given no money, we've given no arms in support of any foreign terrorist group. And what's interesting, I'm gonna kind of flip ahead, is that those aren't the only ideas of material support any longer. The government claims, again, that this was material support of foreign terrorism is the basis of this investigation. But what now is known as the material support laws, which was enacted under Clinton, expanded with the Patriot Act under Bush, and then expanded even further under our current President Obama, after the Supreme Court decided just last June 2010 that now political speech can be considered material support of foreign terrorism if done in a coordinated way. What the government is trying to say is that if we met with a women's committee, which some of us did do in Palestine, that we were actually funneling our support, as in our speech, through this organization to an actual terrorist organization, which is crazy. According to these exact material support laws, our own President Obama could have been indicted in the 80s for his support work with the ANC or the African National Congress. Same with Jimmy Carter, another president. He could be indicted for meeting with Hamas and Hezbollah in peace negotiations. Simply for talking to people in a peaceful way is now material support of foreign terrorism. And so, I know it's really intense and it's crazy, but we're actually facing possible indictments and possible, you know, prison time for refusing to testify. There could be indictments for conspiracy to commit material support of foreign terrorism, and that's probably what the indictments will be. And so I don't want to take up too much time. People can always ask questions later. I brought some pledge sheets, and basically what this is if there is any escalations in our case, as in anyone goes to prison, we're asking anyone here to basically sign and say that you'll do something about it. If I go to prison, if one of the other 23 goes to prison, just because we spoke openly about, you know, foreign policy that we don't agree with in this country, or because we traveled to Palestine or Colombia. That's insane. And so I ask you to sign this and basically, you know, join us. And also check out the website, because this is a crazy case that I think is going to start affecting everyone. And if they can indict the 23 of us or any of the 23 of us, who knows who they're going to be targeting next or what movement they're going to target next. Right now it's Palestine solidarity work, but what's coming next? And so go to our website at stopfbi.net. And I'm going to just close with one quote really quick. I read this at the SOA Watch last fall, and it's very relevant, especially now, but it's a Utah Phillips quote, and it says, "The extent to which you resist is the extent to which you are free." So thanks.